Right now? What happened? Kang is gone. Chapter 18. Marcus paced the length of the North Conference Room while Brian pulled up the surveillance video. Dr. Nikus sat at the table across from me, and I silently counted to 1,000 to keep any hint of guilt off my face. Not that I felt the slightest bit of remorse about helping Kang escape, but no sense being obvious about it. Brian clicked a button. Here's Kang's room right before he makes his move. The wall screen lit up with a view of the gauze-wrapped Kang lying motionless on the bed, the closed door visible beyond him. For nearly half a minute, nothing happened. Then, moving almost too fast to follow, Kang leaped from the bed and to the door, punched a code in, and slipped out.
How did he have a code?
Marcus demanded. I shrugged. If he was really awake the whole time, he could have watched any of us put it in. Marcus scowled, but appeared to accept my hypothesis. It was a darn good hypothesis, too, especially considering I wasn't stupid. I'd given Kang Pierce's code, which I knew because I'd watched him use it more times than I could count. Brian played it again at half speed, giving a nod of appreciation at Kang's economy of movement. When it finished, he switched to the feed from the hallway outside Kang's room, side by side with the view of the corridor that intersected it. He glanced at us and winked.
Pierce would kill me if he heard me say it, but I could watch this next part a million times.
He hit play. On the left, Kang exited his room and broke into a sprint toward the main corridor. On the right, Pierce strode with grim purpose down said corridor toward the intersection. Marcus groaned as he realized what was coming. I bit the inside of my cheek to hold back a laugh. As Pierce rounded the corner, Kang, without breaking stride and with timing so precise it would put the space program to shame, leaped at him, somehow twisting in midair to seize Pierce in a chokehold from behind. Kang sank his teeth into Pierce's trapezius. Pierce shuddered and let out a low moan, then went quiet. Marcus stepped forward.
What the fuck just happened?
Kang did a control bite, I said in awe. I had instinctively done the same thing to Philip a year ago to keep him calm, but with nowhere near the pizzazz Kang had shown. Dr. Nikus gave a reluctant nod.
He did indeed.
On the screen, a glassy-eyed Pierce walked to the far end of the hallway with Kang on his back like a gauze-wrapped tick. Brian stopped the video.
Pierce walked him all the way to the garage and out, after first giving him a cooler of brains and a set of scrubs.
Pierce could not have hoped to resist, Dr. Nikus said. Not against Kang.
Because Kang is his zombie daddy, I added sagely.
So that's it then?
Marcus asked, frowning.
Kang has escaped and we're not going after him?
How could he escape if he wasn't a prisoner? I asked sweetly, earning myself an exasperated look.
What do you hope to gain from his recapture?
Dr. Nikus asked. Marcus opened his mouth, then closed it again.
Fuck if I know. Pierce never saw fit to tell me what he wanted from Kang.
He threw up his hands.
Fine. Kang is gone. More power to him. Now, can we focus on the Christy Charis shitstorm? Brian, will you catch me up on the latest intel?
Brian and Marcus retreated to the far side of the room. I took the seat beside Dr. Nikus, wishing I knew how to erase the lines of stress on his face. You want Christy's help. A sad smile touched Dr. Nikus's mouth.
I cannot deny that her insight would be exceedingly valuable, and her point about having a personal stake in this is compelling. She wouldn't want to risk the contagion spreading, such that she herself might become infected. nor do I see her as genocidal via inaction.
At my blank expression, he clarified,
not helping when she could unlock the answers.
I totally hate her, and I don't trust her, but this is too important. I'll support whatever you decide. I tapped my nose. You and Pierce can tell if she's lying, right?
Alas, it's quite difficult with her, unless she is caught off guard. She is comfortable in her lies, meaning there's little change in her body chemistry through guilt, or fear, or anxiety, thus rendering our senses unreliable.
The door banged open, and Pierce stepped in, with Kyle right behind him. Pierce looked even grumpier than usual, which was no surprise considering Kang had made him into a Pierce puppet. His untamed eyebrows drew together in a glower.
There have been 3 new cases, according to my contact at the hospital.
He and Dr. Nikas exchanged a long look that practically shouted, "We may not have a choice about accepting Christie's offer." Kyle cleared his throat softly.
My contact in Chicago has informed me that Dr. Charish asked her assistant to ensure the Saberton private jet would be available this evening.
I frowned. She sure is confident we'll welcome her with open arms. Dr. Nikas pushed to his feet.
No. Confident that I will.
The lines in his face deepened.
I'm sorry.
Pierce moved to him and took his arm.
There's nothing to be sorry for, my old friend. You've saved us 1,000 times over already. I won't fault you for failing to be omnipotent.
None of us will, I said. Dr. Nikas's gaze traveled the room, resting briefly on each face, before he dipped his head in acknowledgement.
It has always been my privilege and honor to serve the tribe thus, he murmured, though his eyes still looked bleak, and he didn't smile.
Are we doing this? Marcus asked, forehead creased. Allying with Charish?
We are, Pierce said, voice resolute. Angel, give me the number she called you from.
Then added,
please.
Slightly mollified by the attempt at courtesy, I found her number in my previous calls and held it so Pierce could dial it on the conference room phone.
Marcus, you'll need to speak for us, Pierce said. Tell her we welcome her here, but she'll still have to submit to our security screening.
He dialed the number and pushed the speaker button. I held back a derisive snort. Sure, Marcus would speak for the tribe, but Pierce would feed him the words. The ringing filled the room. Everyone stared at the phone. 5 rings. 6. Didn't the bitch have voicemail? On the 9th ring, Chrissy picked up.
This isn't Angel's number, she said,
voice silky and filled with confidence. She had the upper hand and knew it. Marcus straightened.
Dr. Charish, this is Marcus Ivanov. I speak for Angel and the rest of us when I say,
how wonderful to hear your voice, Marcus. It's been ages. I think the last time we chatted was at a party at your dear departed uncle's house.
Marcus cut a sharp look at Pierce.
Yes, it's...
But if you've called to discuss my very generous offer, it's Angel with whom I'll speak.
Pierce rolled his eyes.
Angel's right here,
Marcus said, giving me a helpless shrug. Ready and waiting, I said, with a heap of false cheer.
Lovely. Take the damn thing off speaker, and everyone but Angel can leave the room.
Marcus stepped back as if more than happy to relinquish this bullshit. Dr. Nikas squeezed my shoulder as he passed. Pierce looked ready to chew nails and didn't budge. I gave him a nod and picked up the handpiece. Okay, it's off speaker and everyone else is gone, though I'm not sure why you bothered with that. You know damn well the phone lines here are all monitored and recorded.
Oh, I know. Call it performance anxiety.
She trilled a laugh.
Besides, this feels friendlier, don't you think?
Like hugging a cactus,
I muttered.
Anyway, you're invited to the lab, and Dr. Nikas will share what he's done so far.
That won't do. A few too many unpleasant memories at that lab.
I know all about unpleasant memories, I said through my teeth. Abandoned factories, animal cages, that sort of thing.
I will use the facility at NuQuest Corps, she said, blithely ignoring my comment. It has everything I'll need, and Ari can consult there just as well as in his own lab. It's as close to neutral ground as we're likely to get.
Sure. NuQuest Corps was the biotech company that Pietro had been part owner of, and where Christy had begun her zombie research. You do know I can't make these decisions, right?
Of course you can't, but I doubt your superiors will be able to come up with a better option. Using the tribe lab is off the table.
Fine, whatever. I'll pass it along.
Whatever, she mimicked. Now call the grown-ups back in so we can hammer out the details.
NuQuest Corps should serve well enough, Pierce said, after Marcus hung up with Christy.
He glanced at Dr. Nikas.
Are you all right with that?
No, not personally, he said, expression placid. However, from the larger perspective, it is a win-win. She won't work in the tribe lab, and I do not want her here. The NuQuest Corps facility has most of the equipment and supplies we need. The rest can be transported.
He let out a soft sigh.
I will curb my fear.
Pierce regarded him for a long moment.
Ari.
Dr. Nikas held up a hand.
Dr. Charish, understandably, left no other option, and short of remaining at my lab, there is no better alternative for me. NuQuest Corps is a smart choice for a neutral research base. I can do this.
Pierce dipped his head in acknowledgement.
As Pietro's heir, Marcus has an ownership share in the facility, which means we have full access. Moreover, we can easily manufacture a reason to clear out personnel and have privacy.
Marcus crossed his arms.
We should send some people over now to make sure there are no nasty surprises lurking, just in case.
Pierce looked briefly surprised at Marcus's input, then nodded in approval.
Good call. We'll get moving on that and make security arrangements for the facility.
Everyone departed, except for Dr. Nikas, who had a thoughtful look on his face. I put a hand on his arm. Are you going to be okay? He covered my hand with his.
There will be only a few people there. My irrational fears shouldn't hinder the work.
That's not what I mean. I met his warm brown eyes. A year ago, Christy tried to kill Philip in the cruelest way she could manage, by brain-starving him. When you found out, you said you'd made a huge mistake trusting her, and that you would never do so again. I don't deny that we have to accept her offer, and I know you'll be on your toes, but you never... I groped for the right words. You never stopped admiring her abilities as a scientist, and that's okay, I hurried to add. I mean, even I have no trouble admitting she's brilliant. I just worry about you. Dr. Nikas exhaled a long breath and folded to sit again.
I do admire Christy, her knowledge, her skills, and the facile ease with which she draws conclusions and discovers new paths to explore. I have seen her at her very best, and for so long, I could not help but feel as if there was still a chance to reach what might be left of her soul. Bring her to care for how her accomplishments could aid others, rather than how she would benefit, whether from power or money.
He passed a hand over his face.
I despise having her imprisoned here, coerced to work toward our ends. I know she is a murderess and kidnapper and worse, yet it never ceased to feel vile to use her. It was not justice. It was convenience. And after that incident with Philip, when I lost my temper and commanded she be starved as she starved him,
Self-loathing crawled over his face.
I returned to my rooms and wept. The next morning, I rescinded the punishment.
He looked at me with heartbreaking sorrow.
How can one blame a slave for striking out against her masters?
Do you think she can still be saved? He shook his head.
I am neither foolish nor blind. She was a self-serving narcissist long before she encountered our people. But we destroyed what little hope there was for her to rein in her antisocial proclivities. I grieve for the woman, the person Christy might have been, but I have accepted that she is who she is. I will take full advantage of what she offers, and I will not waste efforts or energy attempting to redeem the irredeemable. And I will never trust her.
I'm sorry, I said. I can't imagine how agonizing it must be to give up on someone. I surrendered to the urge and hugged him. There were certainly people who had given up on me back when I was in full-blown loser mode.
Thank you, Angel, Dr. Nakis said softly. Putting voice to my angst has loosened its stranglehold upon me. I am grateful for your insight and empathy.
I learned from the best. Chapter 19. I headed home, sick and unsettled about Christy being back in our lives, despite my reassuring words to Dr. Nikas, and despite our desperate need of her expertise. But what if it wasn't enough? What if animals other than alligators could get infected? What if mosquitoes really were transmitting the zombie encephalitis, and this mess turned into an outright pandemic? A shiver crawled down my back. My dad. I needed to get him someplace safe, out of town preferably, until all this blew over and the danger was past. If it ever blew over. And what about the other people who mattered to me? The tribe zombies were safe and immune, but not the cops I'd become friends with, or my classmates, or co-workers at the coroner's office. Alan and Nick knew what to watch out for, and the other death investigators and morgue techs knew the basic procedures around biohazards. But Reb, the secretary, might not. She was so kind-hearted that if someone shambled up to her, she'd give them a hug and buy them a hot meal, and get infected in return. Yet I couldn't warn everyone without coming off as batshit crazy. So warn the ones you can. I plugged my earbuds into my phone, then dialed Randy's number. The last time I'd seen him was after I kicked him and Coy Bates out of my car, told them to walk to the gas station, call the cops, and tell them everything they knew about the murder of movie producer Grayson Seeger. Not long after that, my arms and legs had decided to fall off, and Randy had been the last thing on my mind. Until now.
Angel.
Surprise filled his voice. Hey, Randy. Look, I think maybe you should leave town. He sucked in a sharp breath.
Oh, fuck. Am I in trouble?
No, sorry. No, it's nothing like that, I promise. It's just... I don't know if you've been watching the news, but some people have been getting sick.
Yeah, I saw that.
He barked a laugh.
The zombie cephalitis, right?
I winced. Yeah. Zombie, or necromeningoencephalitis is what they're calling it. I have an inside track on this kind of stuff since I work at the coroner's office, so I know this thing is contagious.
Oh, shit.
All humor left his voice.
Like how bad? In the air, or sex, or fluids, or what?
Well, how about that? Randy had more of a clue than I thought. Right now it's fluids. The people who have it like to bite, which transmits it, but it could get worse. I mean, there's some talk that it might even be spread by mosquitoes, and, well, I know we're not dating anymore, but I don't want to see anything bad happen to you. I was hoping that maybe you could get away from here for a while, at least until there's a vaccine or treatment. Please, God, let us find a treatment, a cure, anything. Thanks, Angel, he said with unexpected warmth. That's really sweet. I feel the same way about you. Finishing up a repair job on a private jet out at the Tucker Point Airport tonight? It came in Monday, but we've been waiting on a part for 2 goddamn days and just got it. Once that's done, I suppose I can take a road trip over to Houston and drop in on my dad.
That's terrific, I said, feeling a bit of the worry ease. It was one strand of a zillion, but every little bit helped. Since when did you know how to repair planes? Randy had fixed cars for as long as I'd known him, maybe the occasional motorcycle, but that was about it.
Since 2 weeks ago when I started apprenticing with the main aviation repair guy out there, he said with a note of pride. Figured it was about time I got a proper job, you know. Luke says I'm a natural. I guess I pick up that mechanical shit real easy. Like, I can just see how it's supposed to work.
This is going to sound corny as all hell, but I'm really proud of you.
Well, you kind of inspired me. I mean, if a good-for-nothing like Angel Crawford can get her shit together,
he snickered. I can still kick your ass, I warned, but I couldn't help but grin.
Oh, I know it. I'm gonna slather on some DEET, then call my old man and let him know I'm heading that way tomorrow. He'll either be thrilled or pissed.
I know your dad and he'll be thrilled, I said. Take care, and let me know if you run into any trouble.
You got it. Thanks, Angel.
He disconnected. I stuffed my phone back in my purse. Now, to talk a certain Mr. Jimmy Crawford into getting the hell out of town. I expected to find my dad either napping or kicked back on the couch watching reality TV. What I did not want to find was my dad out smoking in the backyard. Turned out, it was none of the above. Instead, I walked in to find him sitting cross-legged on the floor in front of the TV, game controller in hand, and a gaming headset with Mike holding down his wispy hair. On the screen was a busty blonde wearing a skimpy fur bikini and armor that barely covered her nipples. Dad jabbed a button, and the woman swung a fire-wreathed sword at a dog-sized beetle, slicing it cleanly in two. My dad hooted in glee.
Yeah, take that, you little shitlickers.
His thumb smashed buttons with fierce intensity as a silvery wasp thing dove toward the bikini barbarian. Her arm jerked forward, skewering the bug. It exploded in a shower of sparks, and a giant 4 glowed briefly on the screen.
Hot damn, he whooped in delight. Another level.
Hey, Dad, I said, then repeated myself at twice the volume. He jerked around, then yanked the headset off and scrambled to his feet.
Hey, Angelkins, man, this thing is a real treat.
He gestured to the TV with the headset.
I hope you ain't mad that I cracked it open. But Libby down at Castor's called and said they was getting fumigated so they didn't need me to come sweep till tomorrow when they'd have all the dead bugs. So I was kind of bored, and the box was just sitting here.
I'm not mad, I said, mouth twitching. I am impressed you were able to get it set up. His chin went up.
I ain't as dumb as I look, Angel.
Then he grinned sheepishly. Plus that Arnold Stein character who sent it included step-by-step directions that were written so easy a squirrel could follow them. Even got it hooked up to the internet. Direction said that was important.
That's pretty cool. But why are you a porn star?
I cocked my head toward where the woman stood with her sword raised high, chest thrust forward, and back arched to show off her overly curvy ass. His face scrunched.
Well, the direction said this character was all set up and ready for you. I tried to make me a man-type fighter, but I couldn't figure out how to get him clothes and gear.
I finally settled on it being less weird to play a lady fighter than to be a guy strutting around with nothing but a hanky cover in his junk. I choked back a laugh.
That sounds reasonable, I managed, then stepped closer to the TV and peered at the corner of the screen. You named her Mom Zombique?
No, came with that name. I'd have picked a name that wouldn't twist my tongue all up, like Beth, something easy.
Beth the Barbarian. I like it. Plus, now I was certain the game was from Andrew. But why? I'd like to play it some, I said. But first, you and I need to talk. I couldn't bring myself to tell him I was the cause of the epidemic. At least not yet.
But I filled him in on what was going on with the Shamblers and how dangerous things were getting, then told him I wanted him to leave town for his own safety.
When I finished, he crossed his arms over his chest and gave me a defiant Jimmy Crawford glare.
Nope.
I shook my head in disbelief. Dad, didn't you hear a single thing I just said? Contagious disease that turns you into a zombie and not the cool kind like me?
I heard you, he said. But I ain't leaving, and you can't make me.
I threw my hands up in exasperation. Actually, I can make you. I'm stronger than you, remember?
But you ain't more stubborn, he declared with a satisfied smirk. And you're out of your damn mind if you think I'm leaving when you might need help.
I saw it then, the flash of bone-deep fear and worry. My annoyance vanished. Only a few weeks ago, he'd thought he'd lost me forever. How could I expect him to go off on a frickin' vacation? You're right, I said. I'm sorry. I was out of my damn mind. I seized him in a hug. He returned it with just as much gusto.
Glad you understand, he said gruffly.
I do. I pulled back and gave him a serious look. But can we compromise? Can you stay at the tribe's lab? He made a face.
That place ain't the most welcoming, and it ain't exactly a hotel.
It's not a flea bag dive either. You'd have a room to yourself, meals, security out the ass. He eyed me.
Same as jail. I ain't going, and that's final.
I sighed. There was no convincing him when he was like this. Okay, fine. Stay here, but don't go out. I mean it. And you need to wear mosquito repellent anyway and lock the doors and windows, just in case. My dad grumbled under his breath, but nodded.
I'll get the shotgun out for even more, just in case.
Since when do we have a shotgun?
We don't have a shotgun. I have a shotgun, 12-gauge. Did a favor for a buddy of mine, and he gave me it.
Huh. I flopped onto the sofa. Okay, then. Do you have shells for it?
A box of number 6.
Nowhere near the stopping power of double-aught buckshot, but enough to do damage. I was all for saving the Shamblers, but not if my dad was in danger. That'll do. I glared at him. Just make sure you're shooting a Shambler. When Mr. Clegg down the road gets drunk, he looks like one. Go for the legs. It's pretty tough to actually kill them. Not to mention, I still clung to the hope they could be cured. And if it gets really bad out there, I will drag your butt to the lab. He smiled and settled beside me.
Kinda nice, you worrying about me.
You're my dad, dummy. I let my gaze linger on his face. Though he'd only recently turned 50, he looked at least a decade older. His thin hair was streaked with gray, and lines crowded around his eyes and mouth, helped along by decades of smoking, drinking, and stress, as well as an old back injury and a lack of anything resembling exercise. I worry about you, I added quietly. Not sure I could handle losing you. I grabbed his hand. Dad, I might live a really long time. That is, I'm not going to die of old age. I took an unsteady breath. Dad, you could become like me. I could...
Angelkins.
His voice was soft and calm.
No.
My chest tightened. What do you mean, no? Dad, you wouldn't have to ever worry about cancer or heart disease or arthritis or even a cold. A gentle smile curved his mouth.
Baby, I don't want to be immortal. Don't need to be. I already done my best thing ever. I made you.
My lower lip quivered. But I don't want to lose you.
It's got to happen eventually either way, Angelkins.
A man ain't supposed to outlive his kids.
If we're both zombies, you wouldn't, I shot back.
Don't you sass me, girl,
he said.
I'm trying to be all dramatic and shit, and you're spoiling it.
He tisked under his breath, lifted a thumb to wipe away the tears that spilled down my cheeks.
I can't explain it, baby. I just know it ain't right for me. Look, knowing that I'm gonna die is what lets me appreciate being alive. But what happened to you, getting turned into what you are, well, it was a real gift because God knows you deserved it. You didn't get to live during your first 20 years, but I know you better than anyone else out there. And now that you got the chance to really live, you're gonna squeeze everything you can out of the rest of your life, whether it's 10 years or 10,000.
Sniffling, I swiped at my eyes. Fine, I said. But you have to promise me that you're going to take really good care of yourself from now on. Just because you're mortal doesn't mean you have to take a running start at death.
Sure thing, baby.
He patted my arm indulgently. I mean it. I gave him a fierce look. I want you to get regular checkups with the doctor and quit smoking for real and eat better. And hell, I want you to start exercising more than walking to the mailbox and back. His eyes glistened.
I'll do it for both of us.
He paused.
And mostly because I'm pretty sure that if I don't, you'll turn me zombie out of spite.
I managed a wobbly grin. You're goddamn right I will.
And you'll never hear the end of it. Forever.
He wrapped his arms around me and heaved a sigh.
I guess I better get my ass into a gym.
They won't know what hit him. I gave him a long squeeze, memorizing everything about him for the millionth time, then released him. Is it okay if I play the game for a while? I was pretty sure Andrew expected me to play it.
Hell, it's yours, ain't it? Just watch out for the weirdos, he snorted. There's one feller who kept following me around, asked me to join him for a drink in the tavern, but he slunk away when I told him to fuck the hell off.
He let out a snicker.
Guess he thought I was a lady.
Can't hardly blame him. Look at that fur bikini. My eyes snapped to the headset, and I gave myself a mental forehead smack. Of course. Weirdo guy had to be Andrew. People talked to each other in games all the time. I had no idea if people could eavesdrop on those conversations, but even if it was possible, there was no way anyone would think Andrew and I would communicate this way. I'll be careful, I solemnly promised.
All righty, then I'm going to head over to the Y and see if they can work with what I got.
He struck a muscle pose and made a show of kissing his puny bicep. Better take care of those guns, I said, laughing. He dropped a kiss onto my forehead, then snatched up his keys.
Got 22s now, but I'll have 50 calibers before you know it.
He strode out, singing Bat Out of Hell at the top of his lungs. Good thing Mrs. Grady across the street was going deaf. Chapter 20 I waited for Dad's truck to pull out of the driveway, then made a pass with the bug scanner through the living room, kitchen, and hallway. It would be kind of awful to finally, hopefully, talk to Andrew in a, hopefully, secure setting, only to have the bad guys listen in. Once I finished the house, I scanned the game console itself. Twice. Nothing. Excellent. I grabbed the headset and controller and plopped onto the floor. Then got right back up again to find the directions on how to use the frickin' controller. I soon located them between the sofa cushions along with a crumpled dollar bill and an empty cigarette packet. Nothing toxic. If not for my dad's house-cleaning girlfriend, there would have been anything from petrified corn chips to dirty boxers down there. Go, Gina. After a few minutes of reading instructions and fiddling with the controller, I unpaused the game and got the hang of walking Mom's Zombie around. A couple of beetle things scuttled past, but I ignored them and turned a slow circle, taking stock. Crap, I muttered. I should have asked Dad what the weirdo looked like. People wandered about, hawking various goods. Beggars begged, and shady figures skulked. I got the feeling they were part of the game and not other players. My hunch was confirmed after I deliberately walked into a man dressed like a baker, and his reaction was to give me a hearty greeting and say, "Baguette for you today, sword-bearer?" A red-haired man, with bulging muscles, lounged near the door of the Wayside Tavern. He wore shiny silver armor and flowing purple cloak, and didn't look at all like the other townspeople. He was also facing in my direction. A quick check of the instructions revealed how to talk to other players. I cleared my throat, adjusted the mic, then toggled the button. So, come here often?
About time you got here,
a voice that was definitely Andrew's grumbled. The muscled fighter turned and strode down the street.
Follow me.
I did so, after a couple of false starts and one instance of getting stuck in a corner, and yet another peek at the instructions for how to climb steps. Eventually, he led me to a ruined stone building and down into a cellar so convincingly squatty I ducked my head where I sat in my living room. A single guttering torch lit the room. On the wall opposite the stairs, a dark passageway loomed beyond the rusty bars of a gate. Distant screeches echoed in stereo. "Are bugs going to come out of that?" I asked. I tried to point toward the barred gate, but only succeeded in drawing my sword.
"I killed them already. I didn't want to be disturbed once you finally showed up. I assume that was your father earlier."
"Yeah, sorry about that. This game is pretty cool. Did Saberton make it?"
"No,"
he said, the withering look clear in his voice, if not on his character's face.
"We don't make video games, and even if we did, it would be too obvious for me to use it for this."
"Right. Gotcha." I did a slow turn to take in the basement. "So no one can listen in on us here?"
"On the street, other characters might be able to hear us. Not that any of them would have context or care about our conversation, but there's no point in taking chances. It's safer down here, and we need to talk."
He made an unintelligible noise.
"Would you please stand still? It's distracting."
"Seriously? It's not like I have to look at you." But I went ahead and faced him. "And yes, we really need to talk. You know what's going on here, right? The shambling zombies?"
"I've seen the news coverage, but I'm sure there's plenty I don't know."
I gave him the rundown, including Christie's offer to help, all while wishing Andrew's muscled dude had facial expressions so I could judge how the info was being received. "What is Saberton saying about all this?" I asked once I finished.
"Not a word. And before I address the Charish issue, are you certain those men in the swamp were Saberton?"
"Positive. Rosario identified one of them as a Saberton security dude, Harlan Murtaugh. He didn't recognize the other one, though, and didn't get a good look at the divers."
"Any distinguishing features on the second one? If I have ID on both, I can see what project they're assigned to."
"Oh, man, I'll try. Redhead, skinny but with muscles, nowhere near as tall as Murtaugh."
"You suck as an eyewitness, but I'll see what I can do. Now, about Christy Charish."
"She's completely vicious, evil, and without morals," I supplied helpfully.
"Yes, that's a given. But she's also a solid forward thinker, and not to be underestimated. She's had spies and informants throughout Saberton for at least the past couple of years. Did you know she's on the Saberton board of directors now?"
"Are you shitting me? How the hell did that happen?"
"Part of the deal my mother made with Charish to get her back with the corporation," he snorted. "Stupid move on her part, because Charish all but controls that boardroom now. She has extortion down to an art, and her gift for analyzing situations and exploiting them to her advantage is unparalleled."
"You mean she knows the best ways to screw everyone over?"
"Well, Charish is a sociopath through and through,
So for the most part, she doesn't care if people get screwed over in the process.
Sure, for the most part. Except for people she hates, like me. He chuckled.
True. She really does despise you.
A dark spot on the wall behind Andrew shifted. Or had it? Maybe it was just an effect of the flickering torch.
You wrecked her plans more than once, Angel. She doesn't forgive or forget.
But do you think she would... The dark shape moved. Leaped. Shit, watch out! My warning came an instant too late. The camouflaged spider demon thing pounced on Andrew and chomped its fangs into his head. Blood spurted, then Andrew flickered and vanished, leaving an impressive stain of blood on the floor.
Damn! The graphics in this game kick ass.
I crossed fingers Andrew would respawn soon so we could continue our chat. Unfortunately, the spider demon wasn't satisfied with killing Andrew and sprang toward me. By some miracle, I remembered which button to push to swing my sword and managed to slice two legs off with one swipe. +6 sword of deadly hacking for the win. Another swing cut a huge gash in its side, but the spider demon scored a hit to my leg with a venom-dripping fang. My heart indicator went from green to yellow. Ha! Can't kill me that easily, sucker! I jumped and avoided another fang slash. The spider came back around, and I did a power swing jump and slash combo by pressing both the A button and right trigger. It was Andrew's shitty luck that he chose that moment to respawn, right in the path of my power swing.
Well, that was a pain in the...
was all he managed to get out before my sword sliced through him. Once again, his health indicator went from green to black, and he vanished. Hope he has another life, I muttered, and repeated my power swing on the spider, far more effective now that Andrew wasn't in the way. And the spider screeched and blew apart in a cloud of angry red sparks. Stupidly pleased, I stalked the perimeter of the cellar to make sure there were no more nasties. Andrew shimmered back to life.
Could you perhaps not kill me this time?
Maybe you should play the game a bit and level up so you don't get slaughtered when somebody steps on your toe. He drew his gleaming sword and brandished it.
Try that move now, hon.
I'll kick your ass another day. I snickered and sheathed my sword. Do you honestly think Christy could set her hatred of me aside in order to help us with this cure? And if she's a sociopath, why would she want to help us?
Oh, that's easy. Because she can cover herself in glory. If she does indeed succeed in finding a cure, all sorts of doors will open for her, even bigger and better than Saberton. In other words, yes, she would gladly tolerate you lot for an opportunity of this magnitude.
Ugh. Okay.
I know. She's a horrible excuse for a human being. But she's a brilliant scientist.
Ugh. And she works for your mother? Double ugh.
I'm trying to change that. The board can vote a CEO out. I have a few members who would gladly cut the legs out from under my mother.
He blew out a frustrated breath.
Unfortunately, Charish currently holds sway, and it's to her benefit to keep my mother as CEO. They have very similar visions for the future of the company.
Triple ugh.
I know. I'm working matters as carefully as I can.
Is everything going all right for you? Are you safe?
So far, so good, he said.
His tone was light, but he couldn't hide the ever-present stress that colored it. Your sister has been really worried about you. He was silent for several seconds.
I know. Thea has been giving me reports on her, and you. It's how I knew you were coming back home.
Huh. Interesting. And impressively sneaky if Naomi was unaware. But it would be too dangerous for you to try and make contact with her, since your mother would be expecting it.
Precisely. A bit less of a risk contacting you, since I hate you and everyone knows it.
I laughed. Fair enough. Now then, how do I get in touch with you if I need to tell you something?
Hang something blue in your bathroom window. When you get a call from a telemarketer saying you've won a cruise to Argentina, that's the signal I'm here and can talk.
A cruise to Argentina sounds awesome.
Then you should start saving your pennies because telemarketer cruise wins are fiction.
His character vanished, effectively ending the conversation. Though I was tempted to stick around and kill more beetle dog spider things, I needed to get to bed. There were real monsters to deal with tomorrow.
Chapter 21.
In my previous life, I'd have taken a Xanax to help me sleep, but that option wasn't available to me as a zombie. Instead, I was forced to do stuff like count my breaths and consciously relax. But relaxing was pretty tough to do with the world on fire, especially when I was the one who dropped the match. Finally, sometime after 2 a.m., I managed to doze off, only to snap awake at 6. Morning light glowed around the edges of the blackout curtains. In the distance, a rooster crowed. Miss Paisley's, most likely. She lived near the end of the road and always gave away tons of eggs to family, friends, and neighbors. Except for us. We'd been a part of the egg crew until 3 years ago when my dad, drunk, nearly ran her over while she was out walking her dog. That was bad enough, but when he got out of the truck and called her a dried-up stick and her dog a mangy flea magnet, we were officially crossed off the free eggs list for good, which sucked because yard eggs were a billion times better than store-bought. A text buzz from my phone cut my egg musings short, and I snagged it from the nightstand. The number seemed vaguely familiar, but my frontal lobe wasn't awake enough to release the info. Good morning, sunshine. Be at New Quest Corps at 8 a.m. sharp so I can get blood samples from you and start fixing this mess. Smiley face. KC. Christy fucking Charish. The text had come in at 6 a.m. on the nose, which was what woke me. Bitch. And a smiley face? I gave the phone my middle finger, then dialed Marcus's number. No way was I going to reply to Christy before confirming this wasn't a setup. I was ready and willing to help find a cure, but not if it meant getting locked in a cage and experimented on. Besides, if I had to be awake, then so did Marcus. To my surprise, he sounded wide awake when he answered, which told me he'd been up for a while. We had dated long enough that I knew it took him an hour and a pot of coffee to not sound sleep-fuzzed. Hey, Marcus. I got a text from Christy saying to meet her at New Quest Corps this morning. Will any tribe people be there? I'd rather not go on my lonesome, if you know what I mean.
Dr. Nakis has been there all night, along with tribe security.
In the background, a door opened and closed, followed by the sound of footsteps on tile. A bit of my tension eased.
Gotcha. What about the people who usually work there?
We're only taking over half of the third floor. New Quest Corps regularly conducts highly classified projects, so the employees are used to not asking questions.
Fatigue threaded through his voice, but it wasn't physical. More likely his weariness of being a figurehead, of being responsible without actually being responsible.
And to smooth the feathers of the displaced workers, he continued, we're sending them to a week-long conference in Puerto Rico.
He paused.
Hawaii was too expensive.
I silently prayed a week would be enough. That was your idea, right? The conference thing? I couldn't see Pierce giving a crap about smoothing feathers.
Sure was,
he said, tone a bit brighter. Another door opened, followed by a rising sound.
Sorry, Angel,
Marcus said, raising his voice over the noise.
I'm headed to New Quest Corps right now. I'll see you soon.
The swoop grew louder and faster. Then he disconnected.
Damn, he got to ride in a helicopter? Too bad that little perk couldn't make being tribe head worth it.
I thumbed in a reply to Christy's text. I have to be at work at 8, but can be at NQC by 7. Her reply came as I pulled myself out of bed. 7 doesn't work for me. I'm occupied with other matters until 8.
Can you come on your lunch hour? I suppose we can hold off on the critical work until you pry yourself free. I could practically hear her long-suffering sigh. Nice guilt trip, bitch. And it worked, which was even more annoying. Grumbling curses, I texted Alan. Might be about an hour late, trying to clean up mess from other day. Hopefully he'd read into that and understand what I meant. Do what you need to do, but don't dawdle, please. Cutting to as soon as you get here. Messy like other day. Messy. Two dead shamblers. Damn it. 10-4. I return to the Christie combo. Fine, I'll be there at 8 on the nose, but have to leave by 8:30. Your generous assistance is greatly appreciated. Ugh, I liked her a whole lot more when she was her normal nasty self. I shuffled to the kitchen, surprised to see my dad flopped on the sofa watching the morning news. He gave me a bright smile. Morning, baby. There's fresh coffee in the kitchen. My eyes narrowed as I took in his bloodshot eyes and haggard features, as well as the controller and headset resting at the far end of the couch. Did you stay up all night playing Swords and Swagger? He shifted. Yeah, you got me. I heard you talking on the phone, so I changed it to the TV real quick. My mouth twitched as I poured a cup of coffee. And you might have gotten away with it, except for one tiny detail. Dad heaved a sigh. I ain't never awake this early. Uh-huh. You ain't never awake this early. I added cream and sugar. Stirred. Bad guys get caught when they act out of character. But you made coffee, and that's all that matters for now. He snorted. You hang around cops too much. I can't get away with shit around you no more. Not that I meant to stay up till the crack of dawn. See, I went online last night and found a discussion forum all about Swords and Swagger. Learned how to make a character. So I created me a guy barbarian and then had to level him up so I could do the cool shit. Had to, I shook my head. I don't know which is weirder, you playing a video game all night or that you joined an online forum. Dad chortled and went back to watching the news, but my amusement faded as I rummaged in the pantry for something more nutritious than Pop-Tarts. Christy Charish was being nice and pleasant. That was definitely out of character. God damn it, my dad roared, startling me. Fuck you, you fucking bitch. What the hell, Dad? What'd I do? I grabbed a towel to wipe up the coffee that had sloshed from my mug. Not you, Angelkins. Come see this goddamn shit. It's her. That piece of shit fuckstained cunt. I left the spilled coffee where it was. Dad only ever used the C word for one person. And there she was on TV. Lovely, perfectly stylish, and blonde. She'd always been auburn before. I checked the crawl at the bottom of the screen to make sure it was really her. Sure enough, it read Dr. Christy Charish, noted neurobiologist. Guess she wanted to make a whole new start, now that she was a big shot at Saberton. What sucked the most was that she looked fucking amazing with blonde hair. Fuck her. I was hands down the better blonde. Her voice grated through me. It is my solemn duty to volunteer my expertise and services in this time of world crisis. I will find the cure. Occupied with other matters, my ass, I growled under my breath. People were dying, and there she was, puffing herself up in interviews all fake altruistic and shit. That was definitely in character. Why is that bitch involved with any of this? He demanded. I sighed. We're in deep shit, and she offered to help Dr. Nikas. Common ground to stop the spread of the zombie epidemic. She ain't right in the head. He jumped up, face flushed and hands balled into fists. Tell me right now you ain't going nowhere near that good-for-nothing, Dad. I have to.
Let them other zombie hotshots deal with her. You don't have to be around her.
I do, I blurted. This shambler mess is my fault.
Somehow saying it out loud to my dad made it worse. And better. He would never blame me. Long story short, and it wasn't on purpose, but I'm the source of the infection, which means I'm needed for samples and stuff. His body slumped in a sigh.
Damn, Angelkins.
When you gonna get cut some slack? Soon, I hope. I gave him a wobbly smile. No need for him to worry more than he had to. There's some serious brain power happening when Dr. Nikas and Christy work together.
You ain't fool enough to trust her, right?
Not in the slightest. It's like having a cotton mouth in your sleeping bag. It's fine and dandy while it's warm and cozy, but it can bite you in the ass at any time. He gave a grudging nod of approval.
Don't you let your guard down for one second, you hear?
I swear I'll be careful. I nodded toward the game console. I have some time before I have to get ready. How about we take Mom's on Beak and your guy, Barney? I rolled my eyes. And Barney the Barbarian out on a little spider demon hunt.
How diggity damn. Maybe you can help me kill the skeleton spider.
It would be my greatest pleasure. It took the better part of an hour, and each of our characters died twice, but we eventually fought our way to the lair of the dreaded skeleton spider and dispatched the foul beast. Dad whooped and hollered with abandon as we collected the treasure, but no amount of monster-killing glory could make me forget the ugly truth. I was about to be Christy fucking Charish's lab rat. Even though I'd been to NewQuest Core several times before, I still needed my GPS to help me navigate the convoluted route. Situated in the eastern end of the parish, it was a 20-minute drive from my house, less if you drove like a bat out of hell. 15 minutes later, I pulled into the parking lot and gazed up at the building that housed the biotech company. 3 stories of white brick, with a scattered handful of windows to break up the monotony. Boring, stark, and functional. Squaring my shoulders, I strode up the sidewalk and through double glass doors into a vast lobby that more than made up for the exterior. Marble floors, burnished metal wall panels, artsy sculptures, and a number of comfortable seating areas. 12 or so people mingled near a coffee stand, some in business clothes, another in dressy casual with lab coats. A grizzled security guard sat within a circular desk in the center. A fresh-faced young man in a tailored pinstripe suit approached from the direction of a curving staircase.
"Good morning," he said, smiling brightly. "You must be Angel Crawford."
"I am," I replied cautiously. "You work here?"
"No, ma'am," his smile widened. "I work for Dr. Charish."
"That's awesome. No way could anyone fake being that cheerful. Can you tell me where I need to go?"
"Dr. Charish's research suite shares the 3rd floor with the NewQuest Core genetics program. They only have critical staff on duty and are restricted to the rooms on the east side."
He whipped out a map.
"For your convenience, I marked the way to Dr. Charish's main lab area."
"You mean Marcus Ivanov's research suite and lab area," I said sweetly. "He's an owner, not Christy."
Yes, that is Dr. Charish."
I snagged the map from his hand. "Mighty kind of you to mark this for me. What's your name?"
"Billy Upton, ma'am. It's a pleasure to meet you."
He stuck out his hand. "Likewise," I said and shook it.
"Here's your fob, so you can get into the secured area once you're on the 3rd floor.
He handed me a lanyard bearing an inch-long nub of black plastic. I slipped it over my head. "Thanks for your help, Billy."
"Any time, Miss Crawford."
Bemused, I took the stairs to the 3rd floor, then followed the highlighted route on the map. The fob got me past a locked door and into a lab suite, where I navigated a maze of corridors, passing offices and break rooms and doors marked autoclave and microscope/fluorescence and cell culture.
Lab coats and other protective equipment hung on hooks outside several of the rooms, including one bearing giant biohazard placards and Level 3 Biohazard, emblazoned on the door in bright red letters. Eventually, I reached a large room with multiple bays for focused work. Three long tables took up the center of the room, with drawers and storage beneath. A sink and safety shower occupied one corner opposite a large fume hood. Counters filled with every variety of analytical equipment ran along the left wall, while glass-fronted cabinets loaded with chemicals and supplies hugged the right. An enormous walk-in refrigerator took up a sizable chunk of the back wall. Jacques worked to set up a second whiteboard for Dr. Nikas, while four techs I didn't know held a quiet discussion over photos and paperwork strewn across the back table. The four wore identical starched white scrubs and lab coats, all male, all fit, and all 30-something. Christie's crew, and likely doing double duty as her eye candy. Christie had slipped a lab coat over the outfit she'd worn for the TV interview. She and Dr. Nikas conferred near a computer station, comparing information on the screen to that on a tablet she held. Beside them, Marcus fidgeted, seeming stressed yet oddly energized, probably because he was finally doing something. Brian, Kyle, and Rachel stood spaced around the perimeter of the room, out of the way, but close enough to intervene at the slightest threat. Two men in dark suits with obvious shoulder holster bulges occupied the gaps between the tribe security people. One had a black eye and a bandage across the bridge of his nose, average height, medium build. The other stood at least 6'5", broad-shouldered and intimidating. His nose looked like it had been broken half a dozen times, and his dark hair was cropped close, exposing a wicked scar where his left ear used to be. Christie's muscle. The two stepped toward me. Christie glanced up as they moved. "Stand down, boys. Believe it or not, Angel is invited." She bestowed a winning smile upon me, my bodyguards. One can never be too careful. She passed the tablet to Dr. Nikas. "I'll be with you in a tick, Angel."
"Whatever," I muttered, then gave the two thugs my own brilliant smile. Black Eye seemed familiar, though I'd been around so many Saberton security people it wasn't surprising. He hadn't been out in the swamp for the gator hunt, so I'd most likely seen him at Saberton, New York. Marcus came over to me.
"Come on. You have to see the pen."
"The what?"
"You'll see,"
he said with a wink, then led me out of the lab, down the corridor, and around the corner. Halfway down that hall, he pulled open a gray metal door and gestured for me to step through. I did so, only to find myself face to face with a massive, milky-eyed alligator. Well, not quite face to face, since there was a chain-link fence between us. Plus, the gator's face was several feet lower than mine, but it was still just as much of a shock. Especially in the middle of a friggin' research building. I had no idea what the room was originally used for, but it was the size of a basketball court, with the gator pen occupying the nearest quarter. An 8-foot-tall fence topped with razor wire surrounded a broad swath of grassy turf with a shallow pool at its center, temporary home for 2 12-foot zombie gators and half a dozen smaller specimens, ranging from 3 to 6 feet. "This is impressive," I finally said. Marcus chuckled.
"Crazy, huh? These were here when Dr. Nikas arrived last night."
"Very crazy. Saberton caught all the zombie gators?"
"Not Saberton. Christie's people. And there might still be more infected ones out there. No way to know for sure."
I frowned. So Christie was already setting up to work here.
Her people were, at least. Her plane didn't land at the Tucker Point Airport until around midnight.
The other gators began to trundle toward us. The one already by the fence let out a weird growl moan.
"They seem to like you," Marcus said.
"This is taking the zombie mama thing to an uncomfortable extreme," I said, though I couldn't take my eyes off the big gator. Christie's voice sounded through the intercom, crisp and annoyed.
Angel Crawford to the central lab, now. I made a face. The wicked witch desires my presence.
Mustn't keep her witchiness waiting.
He turned to leave, but stopped when I didn't follow.
Angel?
I crouched. All of the gators were now clustered on the other side of the fence from me, eerily still, and milky eyes on me. Hey there, I murmured. In unison, they opened their toothy maws and sent up a wavering chorus of unnatural growly moans. Marcus wrapped his hand around my bicep and hauled me up.
That's just plain creepy. Let's go before they decide to rush the fence.
I shrugged out of his grip. They won't.
Right. Come on, zombie gator whisperer.
Oddly reluctant, I backed out of the room, then double-timed it to the lab. Christy gave me a sour look as we entered.
Finally? I didn't expect you to go scampering off, considering you're at the heart of this whole debacle. I need your blood.
She pointed to a chair. I could hardly refuse, since she was right about the debacle heart thing. Plus, Dr. Nikas gave me a subtle nod, which helped my nerves. I took a seat and stuck my arm out as Jacques approached with a handful of collection tubes and a pint bag. One of Christie's techs followed him, carrying a tablet and a tube rack. Thick black hair curled in the V of his scrub shirt and ended in a precise shave line, as if his collarbones marked the border of a demilitarized zone. The name embroidered above his pocket was Harold Frost. Harry, Harry? I bit the inside of my cheek to keep a straight face. Hunky Harry, Harry had happy, huge, hopping, healthy hairs. Hardly horrible. Jacques had taken my blood for Dr. Nikas more times than I could count, so I heaved hairy hairs out of my mind, then settled back and relaxed while he slid the specialized needle in. Hey, Christy, what's the deal with your guy in the lobby? I asked after the third tube. He seems way too nice to work for Saberton.
You mean Billy? He doesn't work for Saberton. He works for me. Isn't he sweet? He's terribly young, but I enjoy having him around, like a breath of fresh air.
I blinked. That was the last thing I ever expected Christy to say. And she sounded utterly sincere, too. Sincere my ass. It wasn't in her nature.
Let's get to the tougher questions, I said, voice hard. Why did you have Beckett Connor killed? And why were your thugs out in Mudsucker Swamp?
My hands clenched. I know that's how you got those gators. Your people tried to kill us. I had to take out one of the divers before she could finish off Pierce. Christy grew somber.
Those weren't my people you encountered in the swamp. The gentleman here, she gestured toward her bodyguards, captured those specimens last night. And I certainly did not have Deputy Connor killed.
Bullshit,
I bared my teeth. We ID'd the bald man who was in the swamp and at the hospital, Harlan Murtaugh, who works for Saberton.
Saberton, perhaps, but not me.
She made a sound of disgust.
I'm here independent of Saberton.
Bullshit again.
I have it on good authority that you're trying to take over the Saberton board of directors. Christy rounded on me.
Because those single-minded idiots only care about weaponizing the zombie parasite. They're stuck in a rut of one defense contract after another when there are a multitude of potential medical applications.
She made an angry sound.
And the farm equipment? A move of pure desperation and a waste of time and resources.
You tried to weaponize the parasite by making soldiers. I was vaguely aware that everyone had stopped working to watch the heated exchange. She lifted her chin.
And it was a failure, which is why I moved on, as should Saberton.
Pierce entered, effectively ending the argument, though not my tension. What the hell was he doing here, around people who might have known the real Pierce Gentry?
There was a damn good reason we were maintaining the fiction that Gentry had always been a zombie. If Christy or anyone else at Saberton figured out Pietro had actually killed the real Gentry and taken over his form, it would open up an enormous can of worms as far as how he'd done so and might lead Christy or others to find out about mature zombies and their abilities. I didn't want to think what she might do with that information. Then again, Pierce wasn't the sort to sit back and hide. He couldn't stand being out of the loop in any way, and probably felt coming here was worth the risk in order to make his own assessments. I could only hope it wouldn't blow up in his face. Christy swept an appraising gaze over him and let out a throaty laugh.
"Why, Pierce Gentry, you naughty boy. I thought I'd never get to see you again."
He folded his arms over his chest and glowered.
"I guess this is your lucky day."
"And to think, you were a zombie the whole time you worked for Saberton. That's absolutely hysterical."
She did a little golf clap.
"Congratulations on pulling off such a delicate undercover job for so long. I can't say Nicole is pleased with your little charade, though."
Pierce simply nodded. The safest reply, considering Saberton CEO Nicole Saber and the real Pierce Gentry had spent the last couple of years in a torrid affair. Christy glanced my way as Jacques finished taking the pint.
"Perfect timing. I need blood from other zombies as well, so I can establish proper norms. Pierce, how about you go first? Just one little tube."
I held my breath. Surely he wouldn't let Christy get her hands on the blood of a mature zombie. A muscle in Pierce's jaw twitched.
"You don't need anything from me. There are other zombies here."
One-ear guard snorted.
"Pussy."